Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us today. I'm going to be deviating a little bit from our normal course, which is following the money. And in this case, we're going to be following the people, specifically new people, the millennials, and they're invading the government like the 17-year locusts. They're here. They're here to stay. They're going to take over. And two of our staffers, Nicole Ogrisco and Meredith Summers, have been sort of tracking this phenomenon, and the timing was perfect because your series ran, and then along comes Pokemon Go, which I don't quite understand, but it frightens me as a...
I was debating playing it in Congress today, but decided not to.
Yeah, you...
I was worried I'd walk into like a stairwell or something.
Exactly.
Or into some congressman's office that didn't want me there.
Hey, before we get into this thing, I'm always curious when talking to reporters and people about what's your background. And I know you both came to Federal News Radio as reporters, but Nicole, what's your story?
Well, actually, I graduated college and then started working here as a freelancer and then a producer on the then afternoon show In Depth, and then switched to a reporter's role maybe about 9 months ago.
Okay, very
good.
Not
too much of a background.
Okay, so you're one of ours then, definitely. And Meredith?
I moved from small, tiny town council government in Columbus, Ohio, covering the Worthington City Council and another neighboring school district, and then moved here and worked in Southern Maryland for a bit in Charles County, working in county government. And then I moved up, did the reverse commute back into D.C. and was doing kind of feature, general assignment, everything for the Washington Times. And then I moved here. Well, and then I moved my job here to Federal News Radio as a digital editor back in August and became a reporter a couple months ago. And now I'm doing country government.
Now here we are.
Now you're
a radio celebrity.
Yep, now I'm a radio celebrity. Conquered the airwaves.
Well, first place, when we're talking about millennials in government, and we'll get into all that, what is a millennial? What's the definition?
I believe the age group that we're talking about is anyone under the age of 35. So if you were born between... 1980 and a little past 1990.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be 32 in September and I was 84.
Okay. So you're a millennial.
I'm on the cusp of it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
And Nicole is also a millennial.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good.
I'll call her out on
and
the
I'm not. I'm 100. I'm 115. No, it's interesting. Working as long as I have with the Washington Post and Planet Gov and the Washington Times briefly as a columnist. But I started out being the youngest guy in the room by far, and now I'm not only the oldest guy in the room, I'm the oldest guy in the building. I'm praying that Dave McConnell does not retire from WTOP. But it's interesting to see the generations change, and you guys are kind enough to let I come out from time to time, and I tell you who Doris Day was, and you tell me who
we tell you who Bay is.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So appreciate that. But what started you out on this millennials quest? Because you beat the competition. Some other people have seen adopted since, but you seem to have done it about a month ago earlier.
Well, I just felt like we kept hearing about this ongoing dialogue that there weren't enough millennials in government or we have them here, but we don't understand them. Or it seemed as if they were agency managers were talking about them as a problem that they needed to solve and that we weren't hearing so much from the younger federal employees themselves. So that was my goal, was to talk to the younger feds themselves and just hear, you know, what their experience was like and whether or not they felt satisfied with their jobs, if they were interested in staying in government, or if they wanted to, you know, get out the door as soon as possible. And so we did a survey. We posted the survey on federalnewsradio.com and had a lot of help from young government leaders who really promoted the survey and sent it out to their members who were all fit within this age group that we were trying to reach. And we didn't just talk to younger federal employees. We talked to some federal managers, some everyday readers to our site, and they commented with their experiences working with the younger generation. So that was where we kind of started with all of this.
Well, I remember 10, 15 years ago. That's the beauty of getting older. You think only yesterday, and you realize it was
actually
36 years ago.
A decade ago.
When the Hindenburg, right after the Hindenburg crash. But I had a friend who worked at OPM, and this is going back now, and he said that literally when a young person, in those days our definition of young would be 20 or 30, but when a young person walked down the hall, people called from other offices to say someone's coming. And it wasn't to leer. It wasn't to gawk.
Yeah.
It was just to see a younger person.
Wow.
They weren't getting any new blood.
An endangered species.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. How about now? I mean, are millennials coming into government? I know one of your stories here, and we've put those in the column for reference, but you have some pie charts that show numbers and things.
Right. I think that government has slowly, very slowly, added higher percentages of younger people to their overall workforce. I think it's still not where OPM would like to see it. But I think the reason for that is that the older crop of federal employees, this so-called retirement tsunami that we kept hearing about a couple years ago, it hasn't happened as quickly as we thought. And so older people are staying in their jobs a little bit longer. And then also younger people are spending more time in school. And so they're entering the workplace later. And so that's sort of what we saw with some of the numbers. Between 2014, fiscal 2014 and 2015, agencies added incrementally a little bit more to their overall group of younger employees within the agencies. So that's positive. And we also sort of found that, you know, they're, for the most part, they want to stay. I think the majority of people that took our survey who were under the age of 35 indicated that if they could, they would stay in government. And a slightly lesser percentage of that said that they are interested in even staying within their agency, which I thought was pretty interesting.
It is, and that's counterintuitive to everything we've been told, that, you know, you guys are job jumpers, you're impatient, you want new challenges, and you need constant praise and whatnot. So it's the exact opposite of what we were led to believe.
I have a couple friends in government. One of them works for OPM, or she did work for OPM, and then she moved to USDA. And she would like talk about how great it was that she got every other Friday off, which, you know, when you are a millennial and you have the money to travel, or you have the lifestyle, you don't have kids or a spouse or something, or you have a significant other you want to just go away for the weekend with, that's great. You get like a 3-day weekend every other week. And she loved it. But then she just switched over to USDA because she thought it would be a more interesting job because, you know, she's in her early 30s and was doing like, I don't know, like some kind of data. I mean, it was not anything stimulating.
Yeah,
and
but
that's not necessarily a reflection on OPM, but just on what where that path took her. And so she was like, I'm moving over to somewhere else.
I sometimes wonder if the more attention we as the older generation, and you guys will be there someday, but if we don't constantly misread younger people, get it, we not only get it some wrong, we get it almost 180 degrees wrong. And I know young people coming up now, I know I couldn't wait to get my driver's license. My kids were, you know, putting fake mustaches on and going out and, you know,
talking
to
the
get
ID.
Theirs. And now you read and hear, and I'm finding this with grandchildren, no interest whatsoever in driving or very little interest in it. I'll take Uber. And even buying a home
or around
is not
here,
the same.
Around here, if you have public transportation, too, it's easier. But you don't want to take those responsibilities.
Yeah, just completely different. And I also think, too, the retirement tsunami, which is one of my pet peeves, because I think I unwittingly started it in 1999.
You're the cause of this.
Well, and I didn't
You're
mean
the causey of this.
As my son would say, I didn't mean to do it. I didn't go to do it. What happened was did some with the Washington Post, Federal Diary, and got some numbers about SES people, and you know, they tend to be older and all that, and the number that were likely to retire over the next 5 or 6 years, and you know, but possible, it meant that it was possible for them, but by virtue of age and length of service. But it didn't make any predictions, and then right after that, people picked up for the whole government, and the retirement, the tsunami was born, the brain drain, and we were warned that, you know, in 10 years, the government would be populated by people who were so stupid, you know, the leftovers, that they wouldn't know how to turn out the light as the last one to leave.
It's almost too bad that, like, people mischaracterize it like that, though, because it's not, like, stupid, it's just, like, that institutional knowledge, like,
well,
in your story, Nicole, you're saying, like, people have like decades of information, which is good. Like they, you know, you can go to somebody and be like, hey, well, how do you do this? Or how do you turn this off? Or how does this work? But like, you need to be able to share that. And because then you'll end up with people who have no idea even where the bathrooms are or something.
Yeah. And I think in the survey, we had a lot of comments from younger federal employees who said that their older colleagues didn't want to share that information with them, or that they felt that they didn't want that information to be shared with them. On the other hand, though, from some of the older federal employees that took the survey and commented, they said, well, I don't see any interest from the younger feds that I work with, so why would I share that with them?
Oh, that's interesting. So did they, were they worried it was like a job security? Like, well, I can't share this with you because I need it, or then you'll be able to take my job? Or did they just, was it a miscommunication?
I think that is unclear. I think there is a lot, the thing that I found in this doing this story was that there was a lot of miscommunication just about what one generation wants and what they think that they might want and, you know, how they're perceived. And I think we'll talk about it in a little bit, just that the younger generation themselves feel that they're perceived very much differently in the workplace because of their age.
Hold that thought. Need to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. We're talking about millennials with Nicole Ogrisco and Meredith Summers. They are themselves millennials. They've self-confessed millennials.
Just barely a millennial.
Guilty.
Yep.
Guilty. And it's interesting, you know, you're talking about through the survey that Federal News Radio conducted, really you guys conducted, you're talking to younger people. And did you actually, I mean, you actually talked to some young, mm-hmm. some millennials, and some, it was interesting to me, most of them didn't want their names used for obvious reasons.
Right.
But one lady was a temp. And she was going to go back to school, I think, get her master's. And
right.
she talked to her at great length. Tell us about that.
Right. So
and her problem.
Yeah. So she's 24 years old. She's an engineer, a pretty highly sought after skill set, especially in government. She worked for the transportation department. And she said she was brought on through the federal internship program, and then the Pathways program. She was a temporary appointment at DOT. Had a year or two under her belt of, full-time experience, although not being considered a full-time employee. And she said to her supervisors, I'm interested in going back to school. I want to get a graduate degree. And her supervisor said, hey, we have a program that could help you do that. Let's write it into your performance plan. They did. And every time that she went back to them about, you know, what's the likelihood of being converted to a permanent employee, they always sort of blew her off a little bit and said, oh, we're getting there. We're looking at it. We'll see. Of course, she could only take advantage of this program that would help her pay for school if she was a permanent employee. And so what ended up happening was they ultimately told her, we're extending your appointment, your temporary appointment, for 2 more years. And that was what set her off and what made her say, I'm going to look for something else. And so she's going to, I think at the end of this month, actually, she'll take on a job at AmeriCorps, and one of the highlights of that program is that after you finish working for them, they'll give you some money, some incentives to go back to school, and they'll help you pay for your degree. So that's what she's going to do.
That's interesting because, you know, the STEM, emphasis on STEM now, to have a woman engineer mm-hmm. would be a real coup for any federal agency.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting, just going back to like the whole idea of millennials, like, that is such a good story, and she was willing to share it. And I feel like there's so many millennials who have stories like that that do want to share them. Like, I was just looking through your results. Like, 900 people had input on that. And then you hear about this girl and, like, this whole thing that she's going through. I don't know. I think they're more willing to share. I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and I have to say, for the most part, it was a relatively positive survey, but the comments that people had and the stories that people had to share that's a bummer.
Yeah.
the story that I just told you about, that's not what you want to hear if you're an agency manager and you're in charge of hiring people and managing your human capital. So it's stories like that that make you stop and think, okay, maybe we actually have a problem here. On the other hand, when, you know, we looked at some of the survey results and some other surveys and research that other organizations have done, it sort of suggests, well, maybe it isn't as bad. But I think for me, the thing that was the most shocking was just how many people who said they would like to stay in government.
Again, that goes against everything we were told. You know, these were selfish, short attention span people, and they wanted to jump around and whatnot. And it was surprising how many said they wanted to do it. And again, they confounded our incorrect expectations.
Did they say how long they wanted to stay, or was it just like an extended more than a year?
I think the question we asked was, do you anticipate leaving government?
Okay.
And I think we had 61% say they did not. So a relatively open-ended question. However, you know, that's a majority who said that they'd prefer to stay in government if they can.
That's interesting.
And I think the theme that I saw in all of this was, I'd like to stay as long as I can. I'd like to stay in government. But there needs to be some give and take on benefits, on being able to get promoted, on being able to...
Being able to pay off school.
Yeah, right, being... felt that, you know, valued and appreciated by my boss and my manager and things like that. So I think those were sort of the common themes that I saw from some of those people that said, yes, I'd like to stay, but.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us, too, are older. Somebody talks about school debt and you say, what's that? What does that mean? But it's a big, big deal.
Every other person has it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's interesting, though, because like Nicole and I go to cover things that, you know, have to deal with hiring and bringing in more to the workforce. And so many times they're like, well, you know, we don't want people to see the government as a career. It's maybe 3 years here, then go out, just do your mission, which seems to be like counterintuitive to what people are telling them, which is we're willing to stay longer if you're willing to, like you're saying, Nicole, meet us halfway. Yeah.
Well, Nicole, in one of your pieces talking to this young woman, I think she mentioned, she said, I know retirement's important and I'm going to deal with that. But right now I have to, she was looking at higher education and I thought, this is amazing. Somebody under 30 is thinking about retirement, which is good on you. I mean, that's very important. And you were always complaining that young people don't think about that. And I wonder if the Great Recession 2007, 2008, 2009. I wonder if that caught you guys. I mean, that you coming into the labor market and suddenly not so good.
Right. I graduated in 2013, so I entered college right as it was starting or ending, I guess you could say, however you decide to look at it. But yeah, I mean, for me, that was a big thing was graduating college. I just wanted a job, and it didn't necessarily matter if it was, you know, the best paying job or if it had the best benefits.
Just a job
coming out of college, you know, that's what I wanted. And, you know, with the mindset of retirement is important and there will be things coming down the road that I will need to think about. However, at this time, this is what's important to me. So I think that was a common theme from a lot of different people that we talked to for the survey. Many people actually mentioned that they'd like to know more about retirement, and they wished that their agencies would provide more training for them at their young stage in their career about what they can do now to start saving for it. So, you know, there are some people that maybe might not have as much student debt, and that might be on their minds. So I thought that was interesting, too, that there's, you know, there are people that are interested in this topic and they acknowledge it. They haven't ignored it.
Meredith, how did the recession hit you?
Well, I graduated in 06 and then moved home with my parents, like a really cool person.
Lucky.
Yeah. Oh, I did that, too.
Yeah. Always glamorous. And I moved here in 2008 and right after it happened. Yeah. And I remember I was temping in an office, just, you know, pushing papers to make some ends meet. And I remember watching the stock market fall on TV and people rallying, and I was like, I don't really know what this means, but this is not good. Yeah. And fortunately, I ended up getting a job, but similar to Nicole, you know, you get out of school and within a year or two, you just want to be working and doing something to be like a functioning taxpaying citizen.
Right.
But I had friends who my family was very fortunate. We made it through, but some of our friends, they, you know, saw everything wiped out in their accounts. And I think seeing that retirement disappear for their parents, or at least a chunk of it, like get impacted, my friends were like, oh, okay, this is much more serious. And going to what you're saying, Nicole, like, even if there's not every student or every worker has student debt, I think there are so many who do, they have to get into that mindset of looking ahead. And so maybe they wouldn't want to start looking at retirement, but they kind of have to because they're already in that system of paying off kind of debt and realizing, oh, I really got to be an adult, which means at some point I'm going to retire. But you know, some of the language in there. As a reporter, I look at it and I go, I don't know what they're telling me.
Yeah.
So for someone who is not even initiated at all into it, it would be nice to have a little bit more help. I
imagine seeing your parents really concerned and struggling and maybe losing it. And a lot of us during that period of time took pay cuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5% was not unusual. I know people who took 15. I know one guy who worked for a media outlet. Yeah. They took a 25% pay cut.
Wow.
Now, 5 we can handle, particularly in a recession. Yeah. 25 is...
Well, at that point, you're like, well, do I take the cut or do I... You know, you want to work, but at the same time, you can't even make ends meet and you're still working.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, even thinking about when we covered sequestration in 2013, hearing about people impacted by just a couple days of furloughs.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, you're thinking
Good point. Excuse me, we need to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Hey, Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Term, talking with Nicole Ogrisco and Meredith Summers, and they have been working on a series that we ran recently, and we beat the world on this one, about millennials in government, how they're doing, what they think they're doing, and you were talking, I rudely interrupted you for the break. Continue.
I mean, you know, just when we were covering sequestration and the furloughs in 2013, and, you know, you would hear from federal employees who would say, I can't afford 2-3 days of furloughs. I can't do it. I can't make it happen. And again, when the government shut down, you know, there was a lot of concern of how am I going to make it? I mean, ultimately, federal employees got paid. But
for the shutdown, but not the furloughs.
So I think that even goes to the point of just, you know, the past, you know, 5-6 years that it's been a struggle for everyone financially. And, you know, that was a theme in this story, that ultimately it comes down to money.
Yep.
And that's what drives millennials to make some of these decisions. Although, on the other hand, you'll hear they don't want money to drive their decisions. You know, we hear all the time, I think this is a common theme, that they're driven by a passion for public service. They want to serve. They want to give back.
That mission.
Yeah.
Right. They're interested in the government mission. But when push comes to shove and they have student debt to pay off or other expenses, you know.
Yeah. And I think, too, they want enough money to be able to function and do what they want to do. But, you know, you could say that about any government worker going back in.
Sure.
You know, you don't go into government to get rich.
Yeah.
You don't go in it for fame and fortune. May happen. Probably won't, but it may happen. Well, in your survey, I think it said that 2/3 of the millennials that you talked to or who responded said they thought their older coworkers, I don't want to put this incorrectly, but had feelings for them that were not necessarily good.
Right. Yeah. They said that they felt that they might be perceived differently because of their age, because of these stereotypes that you hear often in the news, you know, based on TV, whatever. And I have to say, for the most part, though, and while the majority of the survey respondents were younger federal employees, we had some on the older side. And for the most part, they were pretty positive about their colleagues. However, there was one who I think had the most stereotypical, you know, common thing that you would hear is, the younger folks in my office are not interested in doing actual work. This person was in his early 60s. They enjoy chatting and playing with their phones for most of the day. So that is sort of the typical response.
I wish we could know
assumption.
When they filled out that survey.
Yeah.
To be like, you know, my coworker's on their phone, but I'm here on this survey right now.
Exactly.
Right. And so that is the stereotypical response that I expected, quite frankly, to see a little bit more of.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, too. And in this case, I would think this would be older employees and probably older men, but there are day traders in government. You know, they move their stocks around. And I think, A, it's not smart, doesn't work, you know. Nobody can do it, really. And also, you're doing it on government time. So how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you really look at, you know, what everyone is doing on their computer, on their phone. We were saying before here, we feel that sometimes, you know, older people are on their phones just as much.
Or they're the ones that are moseying around the office saying hi to everyone. And it's great, you know, when you move, you're the new girl or the young person in the office, and so-and-so comes by and they're chatty and they're like, here, let me show you this, let me show you that. I think we all kind of, you know, take a little bit of personal time at the office to check our phones or do something. But it is a very stereotypical kind of, the millennial, they're just eyes on their phone. There's nothing else to do except, you know, they're tweeting or on Facebook or something.
When the first I'd heard of this Pokemon Go was yesterday, watching the news, and I watched all the channels that I could. And you would think, looking at that it was, I mean, I expected this morning coming to work that there would be cars, burning cars in the road because the people were so distracted. I saw nothing like that. And I went out early. I went to lunch early so we could do the show, and didn't see anything. You said you've seen some examples of it, but I mean, there again, the media would have it that all of you guys, you two in this room,
running around on our phones.
And I don't see it.
No, we're just in our offices, Tindering and using Bumble and dating apps. I think the Pokemon Go, I think it's one of those, you know, fad, and I will admit this as a millennial, you know, you get sucked into a fad for like 48 hours, then you're like, not a big deal. I think everybody, like we were doing it here in the office, not on any work time at all. It was totally at the end of the day. And we were playing with it, and it was like funny and quirky, but then I was like, okay, that's enough. And also we have work to do. So, just kind of.
Yeah. Do you find, and I'm not that you're observing necessarily, but do millennials and I don't know what I am, the silent generation, whatnot. Are we that different in the way we get things done? And if so, how?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a good question. Some individual stories that people told would make me think that yes. I spoke to one person who absolutely did not want his name out there at all, but he's in his early 50s. He works with a millennial who's worked with her for about 5 years and pretty closely. And he told me this story about his young colleague who was really bright, brought a lot of organization, a lot of motivation to their team, got things done quickly and well. So every time she would submit a project, it was more thoroughly researched than that of her older colleagues, more thought put into it. And he saw, and he told me about this, that their supervisors just seemed to not recognize it. So for example, if they were all in a meeting and she would have an idea and she'd bring up the idea and the supervisors there would say, okay, we'll think about it. But then he would bring up the exact same idea. And they would say, oh, okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that right
Great
now.
Great idea, Chief.
Right. And he said that he saw his supervisors give his young colleague work based on how much work their other coworkers could do. So she might be able to get something done in 3 days, and they might take a week or more to get something done. And so she would sit around often with nothing to do, and she would ask for more work, and it didn't come. And so there's another one of someone who is saying that maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I just need to move agencies, or maybe I need to get out altogether. So stories like that lead me to believe that maybe there is a little bit of difference. A lot of people that commented said, we could do things way more efficiently. And I'm just not seeing it in my office. And, you know, maybe that leads me to believe that there are a few differences. But I think at the end of the day, I think millennials, especially in this survey, just said they wanted to be treated like everyone else. And I think, you know, the one comment for me sort of summed it all up was saying, you know, in 10 years, we'll be at a different life stage. Yeah. You know, in 5-10 years, we'll have families of our own. We'll have kids. Our interests will be, you know, maybe the same as yours right now. And so he essentially said everything will even out eventually.
Can't we all get along?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But that is like too bad that it has to be like that. Like you shouldn't go to the government to be like, oh, well, now I want like a really stable, nice, cushy job. Like you should want people in there that are young and brilliant and super fast. I mean, that is hard to kind of overhaul a whole environment of an agency or an office to be like, great, we're going to be a cutting edge, millennials, everything. But there should be like a halfway point so that you are still getting in those young bloods. And maybe they'll leave, maybe they'll come back. But like, it's too bad if like that's how they see the government as like, okay, well, I'll come back when I'm ready to be bored or ready to slow down.
Right.
Because it's the government. You don't want it to be slow, especially in like a tech job or something that has to do with defense.
Where I first noticed that sort of difference, and this goes back decades now, when they started talking about teleworking. And it was a revolutionary idea, and it involved a lot of hardware. So one of the questions was, who pays for the phone line? You know, and I mean, all these things that nobody even thinks about now because of technology. Should you have insurance if you're hurt at home, but you're on the job?
Who pay?
I mean, it was all these
so
things
you fall
came
off
up.
The couch.
Well, yeah. You're watching Oprah and you fall off.
The
Defense Department, and it sounds silly now, but you know, one of these things seemed like a good idea at the time. The Defense Department had a plan where it was going to send supervisors out to your house to see if you were working. Yeah, wow. You know, I mean, if you answer the door in your underwear and the television's blaring and the kids are running around, they got you. And this all seemed to go away. A lot of it stemmed from the fact that older people simply don't trust you to out of my sight. I'd like to, and you're nice, but I can't quite trust you. And that just is totally going away. Some of it's weather. You know, we've had some bad winters.
Yeah.
We've learned that, particularly in the Washington area. Now with the metro chaos, they're encouraging people to work from home. But, I mean, that's a sea change that I have seen and gone through.
I have a couple friends, I was now just thinking about it, that work for the patent office. And it sounds like that office seems to be the most conducive to the younger, more flexible workers. Because they're encouraged. We don't want to see you. And there's actually, if you're not in the building at a certain time, like at night, it's all flex time. Get your work done. That's it. Yeah. You're adults.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're producing what you want, which is sort of like an environment in a newsroom. It's get your story done. We're going to know if there isn't a story there because its page is going to be blank.
Yeah.
So they could go in on a Friday night, but they have to be in at a certain time, and they could work all through the weekend if they want, but at a certain time, the door shuts and they can't get in, which is okay, great.
And they don't have enough desks
complement. Right. Yeah, but they can work from home or work wherever they want and be flexible, and as long as they're getting their work done, nobody's holding their hands, but at the same time, it's there is accountability there, and that seems to be the way that
they
really like
that. In defense of government, though, I can see where a company could say, get your work done and go home.
Mm-hmm.
But in the government, it could be a different ballgame. We need to take a short break here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. We're down to the final stretch. We've been talking about millennials in government and covered a lot of things. And Nicole and Meredith, looking at this, you talked to the people. Some of them answered a survey. You actually met one-on-one with people, got all kinds of ideas from older types, such as myself, to millennials like you guys. Did anybody, we identified a lot of problems. Did anybody have any solutions? I mean, can these two groups cohabit?
Can everyone get along?
Yeah, why not?
I think that, yes. So I spoke with one person who is a former HHS employee, I believe. He now works at Deloitte. And he talked about how he remembers sort of coming into his agency. It was his first job out of college. And, you know, basically saying that when he got there, he just wanted to get started, to get going, you know. And his older coworker said, "You're like, no, you need to sit down at your desk and you need to read this and we'll go from there." And his point is that government could do a better job collaborating with people. That what needs to change is the way that we all communicate with each other and the way we interact and work on projects and, you know, work together to solve a particular agency problem. And so the phrase he used was a talent ecosystem. So pretty much the idea that you bring in people based on their skills and their experience to get certain jobs done. And I spoke with the chief human capital officer at DHS who kind of echoed this idea that maybe we don't need people to stay here forever anymore. Maybe you can come in and out of government and maybe we need to build a system that supports that. So that was one big, that's a big idea, and there's a lot that goes into that, but that was one idea that I heard.
Meredith, we were talking earlier about, I think you raised the issue that somebody might, an older person might be afraid that the younger person's gunning for their job. And obviously, I mean, we're humans, that occurs to us. And I once worked for a guy, and I know he felt threatened by me. I wanted the job, but I was content to wait for years, if necessary. It helped that he was older, but you know, I wasn't
just waiting for him to
kick. I wasn't poisoning. I wasn't bringing him special vitamins or anything like that. But I can understand that. Is there, and again, this is a human factor. Is there a way around that?
That's a good question. I feel like, even though it might sound a little bit kumbaya, there should be a way to meet in the middle of, hey, let me show you how to do this, not so that you can take my job, but so that you can do a better job. Because if not, government, yes, it'll shut down, but it's not going anywhere. But there are private sector jobs that if people aren't working together, they lose money, offices close, then everybody's out of the job. But at least if you're becoming more streamlined, if everybody's working to their full potential, you're not going to have to look for anywhere to cut fat because there's nothing there. It's perfect. You know, it's streamlined. It's lean. But there's still everybody's there's still full desks and offices because, you know, you've got the mix of, you know, younger people coming in with new ideas and can do things faster, like the one girl, Nicole, that you mentioned, who can turn around projects in a couple of days as opposed to weeks. But then you have the other, you know, the older, more established employees who can be like, okay, well, here's, you know, some more information for you, or here's how we do this, and let's work together on it. At least that's what I would hope you could do.
Well, and I wonder too, and this may sound like utopian kind of thing, but if, unless you are the big boss, if mm-hmm. you're, I outrank you, I'm older than you, I outrank you guys, we have to work together. If the big boss made it known that he valued both what we were doing and that we helped each other and it was our idea and that sort of thing. I mean, again, that it sounds utopian, but that would certainly help.
It's management level, right?
I think
that's what you would
say. And I think that a lot of the younger survey respondents said there's no training or there are few mm-hmm. opportunities for training. I just want to learn something new. I'll stay if I can mm-hmm. just learn something new. So just maybe a more flexible environment where maybe you won't get a bump in your GS level. Mm-hmm. Maybe you won't get a bump in your salary right away. But maybe you'll have an opportunity to learn some new skills, to sit with some of your older colleagues, work on a project that maybe you wouldn't otherwise under your current, you know, general schedule level. And you'll just gain some experience. And then maybe, you know, time will tell and you will get that promotion. You will get that bump in your GS level and or the bump in the title if that's what you want. But at the very least, you learned some new skills, got some more experience, some opportunities, you know, even if the money wasn't there for you to move into their job right away.
Well, you know, one thing about the government and the military, and when you look at it, is at a very early age, you can have a tremendous amount of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you can be a 22-year-old buck sergeant, which mm-hmm. I was, and be in charge of a motor pool, which mm-hmm. I wasn't. But it's millions of dollars worth of inventory there. And it seems to me that in the federal government, too, you know, they talk about passing the buck and mm-hmm. people doing that. But in fact, some of these projects that people deal with are multi-million dollars. Some of them are literally life and death, you know, radiation and that sort of thing. Is there a way to sell that to people?
I honestly think that idea is already sold. Uh-huh. I think people...
they want an exciting job.
They get it. They get that what they do, what opportunities are possible, maybe, are a big deal. And that they have the opportunity to really make some impact. And that's why they're there to begin with. But I think if they're not moving fast enough, they're not getting just a little bit more as they show that they can, then that's not appealing. And they might look for something else.
You were saying moving faster. And I was just thinking, even before getting into that job, like there's the whole hiring process, which can take forever when it comes to USA Jobs, because it can take months at a time. And that's just getting through the application process. And so a lot of these hiring managers, when they're telling these conferences, they're like, we can't hire anybody because by the time we get to like the second step, which is weeks later, they've already, you know, this candidate that we would love to have is already being poached by, you know, the private sector, Silicon Valley, to do something that is exciting, like dealing with radiation or pressing the button on whatever. And so, you know, if you're a millennial, you're going, okay, well, here's a job that is going to get me right in the door. Like Nicole and I were both saying, we want to start working right out of school. Like, we don't want to be treading water. And, you know, it comes with a reputation of being exciting versus, okay, well, let me fill in this application and let's hope I hear back after a couple weeks. Oh, okay, well, now I got to go through this whole month-long process. Which one are you going to pick? It's just like...
well, you know, I've dealt with this for years, obviously, you know, how slow the government is and how long the process takes. Mm-hmm. And members of Congress demand that they shorten it and do better, particularly if their nephew is involved in getting a job. And yet, if you do that and somebody slips through the cracks, a bad egg is hired, a security risk, somebody, then the same congressman that demanded you speed will tell you to check your facts better and slow down on this process. Is there a way?
That's true.
I mean, because it's the government, is there a way to speed up the process? Because there's the second guessing, and it's going to get into the subject of next week's show, Meredith, which what you were talking about is publicity a good thing?
Yeah.
Are you a government worker? Do you want that? But, you know, the hiring process is one always been a stumbling block for the government. Is there a way to speed it up and protect national security?
I think they're trying to. you know, we've spoken to OPM in the past, who's launched another initiative now called the Hiring Excellence Campaign. You know, mm-hmm. same idea, different name, you could say, but I think they're trying. You know, again, speaking with the Homeland Security Department, Chico, she mentioned, you know, there are tons of different ways we could do this. We just don't do it. And so her job right now is that she's looking at all of these different ways that she has, you know, different authorities. I think there's over 100 authorities to hire someone. And in their case, they're trying to bring on cybersecurity professionals. And so her point is, we just need to look at them and see what we can do and what we can't do. And, you know, if it's a red law or if it's a blue law, you know, mm-hmm. the idea mm-hmm. that, you know, this is the actual law and this is, you know, the recommendation, you know, what can they kind of shift and move a little bit here to get these people in the door a little faster?
Yeah. Well, you know, you hear this frequently, somebody, particularly somebody who's been in government a long time, and they'll say, we could do this right now. We don't need a new law. We don't need a new mm-hmm. initiative. We do it right now. And I think, is that true? And if so, why don't they do it?
Well, that's
a rhetorical question.
Maybe. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to, and this we'll get in, we can get into next week. There's just like a process, a step-by-step process that everybody has to abide by. And whether that was created by Congress or that was, you know, someone who wrote mm-hmm. the rules or whatever, like there's no getting around that. And so it's a matter of going back and really culling through that process, which, who knows, maybe you need some millennials to do or to think of a new way to do it. But yeah, like there's just no way of getting around. It's like the only way out is through. And it takes a lot to, like your Chico was saying, she has to really look at everything that's available to her. And then she still probably has to go through a process.
Well, hearkening back to the teleworking and whatnot and the ancient history that I gave earlier on that, but it's actually happening now. And the major pitfalls that people were worried about don't exist anymore. The equipment, you know, people have their own equipment or the government issues. It's
the
no big deal.
Does streamline itself eventually.
Yeah. And it worked, but you almost had to have a generation die out too.
These
supervisors who just couldn't comprehend that you were could be trusted out of their sight.
Yeah, and I know the DHS, you know, they told me they're going to have a hiring fair later this month, and they said that it sounded like it was a first, but it doesn't sound that complicated. They put the job announcements out before the fair. They said that when I talked to them, they had 4,000 applications for some of these jobs.
Which shows you people are interested.
People are interested. They're looking through the applications now. They're picking handfuls of people they want to interview at the job fair. They're going to bring the security clearance folks to the job fair. And
so can you get your fingerprints and stuff there?
Yes. Yeah, so you can. Nice. They'll make job offers on the spot and then get them set up to get the ball rolling on the background check. I mean, that sounds like a pretty simple idea, though.
Like a one-stop shop.
We ought to revisit that in another show. Listen, thank you both again. Really appreciate you being here. Very interesting subject, millennials. And stay tuned next week. We're going to be talking about publicity, and it's the kind of publicity you may not like. Yeah. See you next Wednesday.